Hi there. I'm Michael Hall.
And I'm Andy Davis.
Oh my God, that was so serious.
It's just a different read every time. It's just a different read. I'm not, you know, like, I'm Andy Davis. I'm just going to keep coming back with something different every time. Oh my God, to mix it up.
Mine is so straight and you're just like, funky. Well, hi there. This is The Dead Vantage. We want to welcome you to our podcast. I'm completely thrown off.
Here's the deal. It's a podcast where two old school dads, that's me and Michael, embrace new school play.
Oh my God. Dun, dun, dun. It was like, I couldn't even get back on track.
I broke him, everybody. I broke him.
You broke me.
It's taken 2 years.
I know, right? Oh my God. Well, excellent. Here we are again, post the train heist. That was a ton of fun, Andy.
That's right.
Peter did such a good job. I'm so impressed with his DM skills. I was superior.
Honestly, so am I.
Like, yeah, right? That was really good.
I'd love to take all the credit as a dad, but I can't. I mean, yeah, he's a very special kid.
Yeah. Was solid.
I should say, very special man. He's fully an adult.
He's an adult. good. You recognize that? Yeah, that was excellent. Now we just have to get Ollie and get her in the mix.
Get your guys in there.
Yeah, Evie might not. I don't know. They're
not her.
They're
not her. Quite things. Her bag. Yeah. Ollie would be up for it. I was thinking about that. I think at some point I'm going to do a one shot, and I might actually bring Ollie in on that.
Yeah,
so we'll have a few more people in the
Let's do it
in the mix.
Way. Yeah, right on. I'm into it. We have a new topic for today. We're going to do Dungeons and Dragons horror stories.
That's right. Whoa, it's the spooky season. It's horror stories for Halloween. Horror stories for Halloween, for the spooky season, for decorative gourd season.
Yeah, but it's more like anxiety stories.
Yeah, more like emotional horror stories. Yeah, everybody, these are the real horror stories. This has got none of the, there's no jump scares in this. I hope there's no jump scares in this. There's no jump scares in this, but it is.
It's just what do you do? Like we all encounter them. The more you DM and the more that you play, actually, the more you're going to encounter uncomfortable social situations, lots of them, in fact.
Yeah,
and some of them very minor, and some of them actually pretty anxiety producing, particularly
pretty traumatic.
Yeah, well, if you're in a friend group, it can be really traumatic, right? If you're in just a bunch of strangers playing, or you know, acquaintances.
Well, I mean, but I think even when you're in a bunch of strangers playing, it can be just.
That's true. It can be. There's
some stuff on Reddit where you're like some green tech stories where you're just like head shakingly like, what horrible. Happened there? You know, I mean.
Yeah, so drop out, get away, run.
That's always an option.
Run,
pull that ripcord.
Drop. You know, leave the building. Yes. All right, so we're gonna go back and forth, and we'll throw a couple of these situations at each other and get some advice on how to respond to them. Do you want to maybe?
Oh, I think it's time. I think we gotta roll.
We gotta roll initiative.
Let's see what's going on. Ooh, I rolled an 8.
I rolled a 3.
Oh, yeah,
looks like an 8, but there we go, 3 on my giant dodecahedron. All right. Well, so Andy, you can choose. Do you want to go first? Do you want to receive first?
I'll go first. I mean, this is a very personal one. I mean, we've all heard the term murder hobos, right? Yes. You know, murder hobos being, you know, players who run around and kill absolutely everything at every chance and maybe are not going the best for role playing. And in this particular story, it's me. I'm a hobo. No.
you hoboed?
I hoboed.
Oh, man. No,
so when I got back into 5e, my previous experience playing had been in high school and college. And so now it's like 15, 20 years later when I was getting back into it. And I had been DMing. And the kids that I've been DMing with, Peter and his friends and my daughter and her friends, none of them had like the habits of the murder hobo grind for treasure that my friends had had and that I'd had as a kid. So I decided I want to start playing, but none of my kids aren't of an age where they want to DM. So I started going to my friendly local game store. Shout out to Games of Berkeley. And I started just basically dropped in and found a random kind of group of guys who were about my age, but they had all been playing consistently through second, third, fourth edition and all that. And so we had an incident in the game. So I'm like literally playing straight up. Playing Kadri Ghent, who is an urchin orphan, thief rogue, you know, grew up on the streets, has been working as a thug for Thieves Guild. Just one massive cliche after another.
Right.
And so we're playing. And,
which can be a lot of fun, by the way.
Which can be a lot of fun, right? You know, it can be a lot of fun. But, I'm still, like, getting my sort of, like, player feet underneath me. And we end up in a situation where we've captured a couple of goblins, and we're interrogating one of them, and we get the information we need. And because I'm of the mind of, like, oh, that's how you get experience points, I just straight up kill the other one. mid conversation. And you've never seen a table, like, there's... four other people at the table, including the DM. There's me and four other people. All four of them turn to me and look at me like, what the fuck are you doing?
Oh, man. Right.
And I was like, oh, hey, something about this game has changed since the last time I played it.
Yeah.
So absolutely, I was not the good guy in that situation. I absolutely messed up. But, you know, to my fellow players' credit, to Ian and Randy and some of the other guys, they were actually very good about, like, hey, you know, Ian was playing, it was like Sister Mercy or something like that. It was a female character. And he was like, we basically all agreed to retcon those actions because he was like, my character would not stand by and let that happen.
Right.
And I wasn't so, you know, and I want to have a good time and I want these people to, I mean, I think that's the key, right? You know, you're there to have a good time. You're there to like cooperate. And so I was like, okay, so clearly I have stepped over some sort of line that I wasn't aware of. And we talked it out and I was like, okay, yeah, of course. Well, if that's, and it's just interesting to me because it's the difference in motivation. When I had been playing the game before, it was all about like, how much stuff can I kill? How much treasure can I get? Because those were the ways that you advanced. And one of the ways the game's evolved has this other thing. But yeah, I was the murder hobo. I was the bad guy. And if that had gone unchecked, I probably would have just continued to just kill everything when I had an opportunity. I'd just kill something, you know, just to get the point, basically.
Yeah, as a DM, I think sounds like your DM did the right thing. I think that as a DM generally, when somebody's straying into murder hobo, we have a character like that in my current campaign. She really likes to kill things.
It's
but what I did have a conversation with her about it because she's a warlock, a hexblade, and she's like, well, that's what my patron wants. And I'm like, interesting, I get that. How about your patron just wants you to have an excessive emotion, and sometimes it comes out sort of murderously and sometimes it comes out in other ways. And she's like, oh, I really like that. So I gave her some other role-playing options.
Right.
And then what I did was whenever she starts to veer in that direction, I'm like, wouldn't that be better as a threat rather than an action? Right.
Yeah.
Like, or, you know, does the rest of the group agree with that move?
Yeah.
Just as a reminder to pull her back into a moment where it's like, this is a collective game. We're all making decisions together. Right. Your decisions have consequences on the rest of the group. Are you sure you want to do that?
It's always very funny when people say that thing of, well, that's what my character would do.
See, that was going to be my next one, was like, that's what my character would do moment.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to step on. No, let's
go into it. Yeah. And how do we handle that? Right. Yeah. I think so. I'm going to start with a very simple one. Then I've got a really weird one. The really simple one is just the never ending insistence that your character has certain flaws or traits that require it to behave in an excessively antisocial and non-collective environment way. Right. Like usually represented by that's what my character would do.
Yeah.
Which is very clearly BS because you're making the freaking decisions. This is a hand puppet guy, you know? Like, this is not a sentient being.
Michael, you don't understand. I am so method. I am embodying Garrolax, the paladin of Bahamut, who can abide no evil in any form. So I'm going to lay waste to the neutral good shopkeeper who's just trying to make a profit.
That's right. Come on over and I'll brand you with a literal brand if you're so method.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I'm curious, Andy. I sort of gave a hint at how I handle those types of moments. But how do you handle those moments when a character is not listening to the group and has got some internal agenda that is working against the group, which again gets represented in that. It's just what my character would do.
I mean, so I'm, as a DM, I'm pretty flexible in terms of my plans on any given session. Yeah, right. And when I have played with people who've gotten into that sort of mindset, I'm a big fan of consequences, right? Yeah, you know, I think you should in the moment, especially if they're doing something that the rest of the party is not into and it is going to screw. It's one thing if they're like, hey, I can't, my character can't deal with this. They're leaving. Or they're going to step out of the room to let, you know, they're playing a paladin and the party is roughing up somebody or is going to do something. And the paladin's like, it's one thing for the paladin to say, you must stop and abide by my wishes. It's another thing my character, that's how my character would behave. And it's nothing for the paladin to just leave, right? Yeah. I'm disappointed in you as a party, as my friend, I'm leaving. And that could be leaving for good. That could be leaving the room while whatever this thing is that happens. So that's one way that you might encourage them to deal with it. But the other one is like, if they're going to, you know, I'm playing an evil character and an evil character would absolutely murder this, this person. Hey, guess what? There was a witness that you didn't see. And now you're wanted, right. And you're wanted in a way that's not like, oh, this is fun. It's like, no, you're wanted in that every town you go into, there's a wanted poster of you hanging on the wall, and every town guard, you have disadvantage on every interaction you have with the town guard from now on. You haven't, you know, if you continue to behave that way, no NP, everybody runs screaming from you.
I really like that one, Andy, because it has a significant gaming impact for them. It means that they, particularly if it's a location, critical location for the game, right, they need to be there. It gives them a really significant hurdle to overcome and maybe pave over in some way to sort of also, they'll remember this and maybe not behave that way in the future. So because you can't just
bring Jack the Ripper to our social interactions anymore.
Yeah, kind of. There is that kind of thing, you know, where people, and I think one of the things I find is that, and this is nothing against our younger audience, but I do think that that is one of the things that I think when you first start playing, you know, like you think about like Kadri, right? When you first start playing, you kind of want to lean into those fantasy tropes in a way that can be very
well. You also, I think a lot of people in even in our generation grew up playing video games, and there are no social consequences generally. Now there are sometimes game mechanic consequences to bad behavior, but there's no general, like, nobody's judging you for making it, and that's sort of some of the fun of the video game, is that you can really make bad choices and just see what happens, right? Oh, I killed that guard, now the whole town guard is after me. Oh, that was a mistake. I'm gonna go revert to another save. Well, in D&D that doesn't really work. You know, you can retcon in the moment, but retconning a couple of sessions later is really tough.
It's so, in general, that whole sort of conversation is, you know, oh, that's what my character would do, is for me, one is having that conversation, and like you did, kind of encouraging them to find other ways to express what it is their character would want to do.
Right. You don't have to. That's the one thing I do tend to recommend the most with people who are like that. Or, you know, you can usually get a sense of them pretty quickly as a DM. And I just sort of say, look, play it to the line, play up to the edge on it. It can be a funny character trait. But recognize when your actions, rather than your words, when your actions have consequences for everyone else at the table, you know, just be aware of it. And then you can have a lot more fun with it. I had a character in a recent campaign where I was playing a thug, right? My character was a thug, and she was an enforcer, but she had a truth spell cast on her. So she had to tell the truth. So they were with a character who they were trying to help. And somebody else mentioned hurting him. And she said, yeah, we might have to kill him. Right. Aloud in front of him. And then he ran off. There was a pretty big consequence. And he was supposed to help us. He was supposed to be like an NPC that was supposed to help us the whole game. And he ran off. And that was a great consequence. But it was also, I didn't feel bad about it because, one, I didn't bring it up. But two, like, my character's under a truth spell.
Yeah, of course.
She was definitely
thinking. You just made everything harder, which can be a lot of fun, but you did it in a way that's not...
It was
funny. That's what my character could do is also related to what's sometimes described as main character syndrome, you know, and a lot of that also has to do with listening, right? Yeah. So I think a big part of having a successful at the table experience is just paying attention to the mood around the table. And if everybody is going one way, you have to be very thoughtful if you want to change directions or go against that. If everybody else is being very serious and you're like, hey, I'm a goofy clown, that's just as bad as being the grimdark character in the midst of
unless you're the straight man,
but even that is this, you have to be actively listening and engaged with what's going on at the table to make that work.
No, that's great. It's session zero. We won't go into it. We actually have an episode on session zero. So just, but a lot of this stuff can be avoided in a session zero.
Yep.
But like there's some mentality, and I'll just run into my second one and then you do your last one. Yep. And then if we have time for a few more, we can do a few more. But the trick with a session zero is to, especially in long running campaigns, is to keep the spirit of the session zero alive, which means, yes, sometimes people need to be removed from a campaign. Yes. Sometimes you probably should leave a campaign. But if your group is sort of operating in a session zero mindset throughout, you can have the hard conversations about things that are making you uncomfortable all the time. So I'm going to give you an example of something that made, I read this one, and it was actually a really interesting one. And some of the responses were really interesting. I read that. I think it was on Reddit. There was I read this one. It was a woman joined a group of longtime players, and she's a friend of theirs. So this is a friend group. She's joining a friend group, and they play for a couple sessions. Everything's going great. And at some point, they have like a feast, and one of the characters is a cook character. And he, you know, described all how he slaughters the hog and makes the food and all this kind of stuff. And this woman was a vegan, and she joined the group mid-session. So she wasn't part of their session zero. And she had a major issue as a vegan with like the description of the slaughter of the meal, right? Because it was a center point of this episode or whatever, this session they were having. And the DM was really struggling with it because she wanted no harm to any animals. She wanted, she made some pretty strong demands in reaction to this moment. And he posted about how to deal with it. And people, of course, were like, boot her, get rid of her, vegans, blah, blah, blah. But a lot of people were just like, well, have you talked to her? And then guided him through it. It was just an interesting dynamic. And they ended up resolving it because they're friends and they treated it like a mature adult. And they had a conversation about it. But it was just
Respectful of each other's points of view about this stuff, right?
And she offered to cook them vegan food and bring vegan snacks so they could, it was just a very interesting. What I liked was how mature the response was. But it's a great example of a session zero sometimes isn't enough because people might join midway through. But I love that it was such an interesting problem to have somebody come in with, you could imagine. So Andy, I don't know how you would deal with it, but like other versions of that was somebody would come in with strong religious beliefs and feel uncomfortable about how religion is being handled. And the reason I put it into those buckets is that's different than I want something funny and I come into a horror campaign and I'm surprised that it's a horror campaign. It's like some of those things could sneak up on you.
Well, and I think I think that is one of the things that as a DM, especially early on, even if it's not session zero, but just that you're always keeping an eye out for the tension between people's backstories and the stories they want to explore for their characters relative to what, the reality is successfully or unsuccessfully, a lot of D&D can unpack a lot of trauma for people.
Yeah.
Right. And it does, I think I always refer to it as an empathy machine, right? It really does force you to build a lot of empathy, both with your fellow players, but also it forces you, you're literally creating another character to put your head into and explore that. And I think I think for people who aren't expecting it or for people who are less experienced, sometimes that process can be really triggering, you're like, oh, wait a minute. And that's one of the reasons that like session zero is such an important piece is it'll let you go, hey, there are just certain traumas that I am uninterested in exploring. One of the notes that I had for things to talk about is racism. Right. Mm-hmm. So I had an experience with a DM who perfectly lovely woman. And first couple of sessions I was playing with her and I showed up and I had a half drow character who was like the scion of this family. And he was a warlock, but it was sort of a fey patron warlock. It was this whole thing. Well, what we didn't really have a session zero at Games of Berkeley. And she was just, and didn't say, oh, this character is going to be at a disadvantage because there's racism against drow in that's how I always play it. She just straight up, like my first interaction with any NPC was, even though I had like a noble background, was like some guard like spitting on me for being a half drow. And I'm a cis white guy in his 50s, right? I'm so clearly I have a ton of privilege. It was shocking to me. Like literally like I had to stop. I was just like, wait, what? It was something I literally have never experienced before. Mm-hmm. And so as a moment of growth for me, it was kind of interesting, but it also was I'm not sure that it was necessary. And I, as a player, they're the DM. I was like, I'm just going to choose to ignore it. Right. I didn't bring it up with her and everything. And maybe I should have, but I did ask her, I was like, I think I asked her like, what's that all about? And she said, oh, well, that's how people treat drow and half drow in this universe. And I was like, well, it's just the Forgotten Realms. We're playing playing one of the modules. I was like, I think that's your interpretation, but okay, I'm not gonna
That's a hard line to walk because I think, you know, when I first started DMing again after a while, I did have some characters that were sort of racially biased against, you know, NPCs, but yeah. I did it in order to make them bad guys, right? It was sort of like, it was singular, it wasn't endemic, and it was done to make somebody really dislike the character straight out the gate.
So there's a thing, I don't know if you've ever seen. And sometimes it shows up on Reddit. It's the one sentence horror story.
Yeah.
In that same vein, it's like somebody wrote, if I play a black dragonborn, can I say the N-word? And I'm just like, oh my God, if like somebody pitched that to me as a character, I'd be like, hey, you know what? We don't need to play together.
Yeah.
Like, right. If that's where your head's at. That's where your head's at. And I just really encourage people to think this is an opportunity to explore something outside of yourself, but there's no reason to dig into that swamp of
I think about how I handled it when I did that, some of those things, I just don't do them anymore. There are more elegant ways to do the same thing. They're just more elegant ways to do a lot of things.
I think
you don't need to rely on some of those really base things in order to get really strong emotional reactions from your characters, from your players.
And I've come around to the idea, I think we've talked about this before, I've come around to the idea that it's less about whether someone is an elf or an orc and the racial component of it.
Yeah.
And it's more about the cultural part of it, right? Is somebody from the city versus somebody who is from the country? The urban versus rural, ranchers versus someone who's living a pastoral life, the developer who wants to build up the city versus somebody who wants the nimbies versus the yimbies, right? It's
classic tropes that are useful, no matter how you place them.
And I find those to be, you can explore all the same tensions, but you can do it in a way that doesn't activate,
that's
frankly stuff in this culture that it's just, we live in a society that's built on all this stuff. Mm-hmm. Is it useful to explore from the sense of understanding? Maybe, but it's so traumatic for people that it's really, it does not make for a fun game sometimes.
No, it doesn't.
And that's really the goal, right? And, certainly our goal is to help people. And I think that's one of the things that differentiates old school play from new school play, is that a more empathetic understanding of some of the biases that were built into the old ways of playing.
They're just cooked into the system.
It's kind of crazy.
I think that's great advice, Andy. I think the one other nuance on that I think is, look, if you want to have a group and you're going to tackle racism in your group and your group wants to do that, have a very long conversation about it. You can do it, and
likely, if you're going to do that, assume that when you're done playing, you're all going to sit and talk about what just happened for
that's a good idea.
30 or 40 minutes afterwards.
Yeah, because the whole point is, if you're going to do it as a point to role play out some of this trauma, have a reason and then keep that reason.
Yeah, keep that reason in the front.
Don't traumatize people and then see ya. I enjoyed the peanuts. Yeah, thank you.
Honestly, good advice just in general. If you've had a game that's been a session that's been pretty hard on players, like they've been slapped around a bunch, maybe you don't have to let them go on a win, but maybe just give them a little moment to depressurize as a group before you turn off the Zoom call tell everybody, okay, lights out, it's time to leave the building. Okay, I'm gonna lighten it up a little bit.
All right.
After all that heavy, I've got this is more of, it's almost like it's less of a horror story, more of a pet peeve. It's players reading ahead. Like have I bought Storm King's Thunder and then had a DM 2 days later say, oh, hey, by the way, we're going to do Storm King's Thunder. Then like, okay, I guess I'm not reading that book right when I thought I was going to buy it.
Yeah.
And it's really just, it's also tied into this idea of metagaming and all the rest of it. But it's basically, as a DM, when you put in all this effort and whatnot into prepping a session and coming up with surprises,
even playing straight through a written one.
Yeah, even playing straight through a written one, right? No twist. It's a lot of effort, right? And it is so deflating to have a player, if they're being subtle, somehow they're anticipating everything and they're jumping on every trap. No, they're all that extra investigation check to look for traps that like, oh, I'm going to stay in this room until I absolutely roll that perception check that lets me find the secret door.
Right.
Oh, they know exactly what the bad guy's vulnerable to. You know, they have a plan before they've even started. Oh, they happen to have prepped all the perfect spells. Like it's just, it's fun to get whomped on sometimes as a DM, but it's no fun when essentially they've read ahead of the whole, and it's no fun for their fellow players either. Yeah. You know,
I think, so, you know, as good as I think that's a great, I think there's some of that is video game behavior. It's always been true.
But that's
And I think, you know, like even just with the success of Baldur's Gate, which I've started playing indie and it is everything they say. It's really fantastic. Like, it's so freaking
good. How do you find the time?
I'll do like a half an hour here, half hour there.
Okay. I
do it in small increments and I'm not very far. So, but it's really good. And it's a great equivalent to like solo adventures. It does feel like you're playing D&D, but it also feels like you're playing a video game, because if you're struggling, you can go find a playthrough and say, how do I get past this thing?
Yes.
And it's that that level of metagaming, which is completely acceptable in video game world, is not fair to the people you are playing with.
I mean,
part of the social contract, man.
Yeah. I mean, I think we've talked about metagaming in the past, and I am a pretty knowledgeable player, right?
Yeah.
I know more stuff than my players tend to know.
Yeah.
And I'm smart enough and I've played enough D&D and read enough fantasy novels that sometimes I can guess where the story's going.
Yeah.
Without having read it.
Yeah.
But I also find that even when I have read ahead in the books, sometimes it's fun just to keep my mouth shut and see what the rest of the party does. Yeah. Let them take the lead in the moment.
Failure is fun. I think about when we just did the train heist, the when we said what were our favorite moments. Our favorite moments were weird little moments. It wasn't like laying the big hit. As much as I would have loved to send him flying off the train with
Vortex warp,
which would have been brilliant, because Peter wasn't anticipating it. Failing and then having him do 56 points of damage to me because I didn't have a reaction to put up shield was equally fun. I mean, I didn't it was really funny.
Yeah, exactly. And the same. Yeah, I think that's exactly right. It's fun to fail. It can be fun. Basically, I would just say, like, if you're a metagamer, which we all are, just again, listen to what's going on with your party. Let other people who maybe don't know as much as you do have an opportunity to shine. It is really, it's an ensemble game, right?
Yeah, it's a collective game.
And so it's a collective game. So it's great to allow the spotlight to, and not feel bad when the spotlight shifts to another player for a beat or a moment or even a whole session where it's all about them, right? It's that's the DM's job, is to just keep moving that spotlight around and give everybody a chance to do the thing they're good at, so they can feel strong and powerful.
Yeah. Two examples in that train heist: you being able to move around the train at just epic speed and get all your things done. And then Pete letting me pick an impossible lock.
Yes.
He didn't make it easy.
No, he didn't. I was like, he's a DC 30. I was like, what?
But I was built to do it, so it was good. All right, well, I think that's all we got for today. I mean, I think
I got one more thing, it's really it's okay. It's just the inverse of the metagame thing, which is like the vengeful DM or the sort of like the
DM. We talked mostly about players.
Railroading
DMs, it fit into the same bucket as vengeful DMs. You didn't do what I wanted you to do, therefore I'm going to make this task you've chosen impossible.
Yeah, you know, and I think that's the thing. It's just this is personal philosophy. As a player, I want to make active, interesting choices, and as a DM, I want to set up situations where players are making active, interesting choices and then reward them for it. So if they have, you know, fought hard and the party is on the ropes and they get a wish, spell and they wish, hey, I wish me and all of my party, and including the people who have died, are transported somewhere where they can be restored, I probably would let them get away with that and not, even if that was off the track, right, of what I expected the party to do, I'm going to let them do that rather than try to figure out like, oh, how can I come on the exact language of the wish spell? Yeah. You know, I wish for $1 million and they get a million deer, like whatever it is. It's like,
sometimes that's funny. A lot of time it's not.
Yeah. You know, and so it's just, again, like as a DM, just like the players, you know, you should be listening and looking at the mood of the table and trying to help people have this heroic experience.
Yeah. It's great. Great advice, Andy. Well, thank you, everybody.
Yeah. Thanks.
Do you have a walk us out?
Yeah. I was just going to say, you know, the guy who, this is on track with what we were just talking about, the guy who stole my spell book, he just died.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, how bad. My best wishes are with his family.
That's good. I like that.
You know, that's good. It's what it is. But yeah. All so right, happy, well, happy decorative gourd season, everyone.
Yes, absolutely. We're in that time. If you're in Berkeley, go see Andy's house. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's going to be a devil of a good time this year. I think we're going to do, it's going to be devils.
Devils, ooh.
Angels and devils, maybe just devils.
I think we're doing pirates this year.
I've
got giant tentacles that will be coming out of our...
Oh, you got those inflatable tentacles?
Yes, yes, I did.
Son of a bitch, man. I've been wanting to get those for a long time.
Yeah, they're going to be fun.
Sick.
All right, well, thank you, everybody. You can find us on, Linktree. What's the Linktree?
The Linktree is linktr.ee/thedadvantage, and that has most of our socials.
We're on Instagram, Threads.
We're on Facebook, and we're on Threads, and we're also on TikTok. And we're not, I don't know, we've posted a lot of stuff on TikTok.
I'm not doing enough there. I'm still learning my way through the TikTok, but we are doing reels now on Instagram, so that's kind of fun. Go check out some of our fun reels.
You can see the characters in action getting smacked around. Michael's doing, it's gone crazy with animation.
I went a little overboard on you. I'm like, because you can pose those freaking zero force. I'm gonna probably like go do a full on 3D animation, like stop motion claymation thing soon with that, because you can do it.
It's awesome.
Why? Because I can.
Why? Because you can.
All right. Yeah. Well, thanks, everybody. We really appreciate you listening.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, tell your friends about the podcast. We seem we're sort of bouncing around right around the top 100 of gaming podcasts on Apple, which is great. Thank you very much for listening. But tell your friends, rate and review us. All that stuff is super helpful for other people to find us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.